Imagine telling the monarchs involved that 1,000 years later, both Jerusalem and Ashkelon would be Jewish cities in a Jewish state. The monarchs unquestionably would have been astonished. But the man who would have believed it was the Jewish rabbi and doctor whose medical treatment became very much in demand, whose own fame in the Jewish world grew larger and larger. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 133, Maimonides, Amalric, Richard, and Saladin. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It is today one of the well-known letters of Moses Maimonides, describing his schedule toward the end of his enormously influential life. A man who had become an intellectual beacon and leader of Jews simultaneously assumed the position of doctor in the court of the Sultan. Writing to an acquaintance, Maimonides tells him about his daily commute from Fustat, which he calls Misr, to the palace in Cairo, or Kahira, a journey that the edition of Maimonides' writings published by Rabbi Dr. Isidore Twersky tells us was around 1.5 miles. Maimonides writes, quote, "Now God knows that in order to write this to you, I have escaped to a secluded spot where people would not think to find me, sometimes leaning for support against the wall, sometimes lying down on account of my excessive weakness, for I have grown old and feeble. With regard to your wish to come here to me, I cannot but say how greatly your visit would delight me, for I truly long to commune with you. It would anticipate our meeting with even greater joy than you. Yet I must advise you not to expose yourself to the perils of the voyage. For beyond seeing me, and my doing all I could to honor you, you would not derive any advantage from your visit. Do not expect to be able to confer with me on any scientific subject, for even 1 hour, either by day or by night, for the following is my daily occupation. I dwell at Misr, and the Sultan resides at Kahira. These two places are 2 Sabbath days' journey, distant from each other. My duties to the Sultan are very heavy. I am obliged to visit him every day, early in the morning. And when he or any of his children or any of the inmates of his harem are indisposed, I dare not quit Kahira, but must stay during the greater part of the day in the palace. It also frequently happens that 1 or 2 of the royal officers fall sick, and I must attend to their healing. Hence, as a rule, I repair to Kahira very early in the day, and if nothing unusual happens, I do not return to Misr until the afternoon. Then I am almost dying with hunger. I find the antechamber filled with people, both Jews and Gentiles, nobles and common people, judges and bailiffs, friends and foes, a mixed multitude who await the time of my return. I dismount from my animal, wash my hands, go forth to my patients, and entreat them to bear with me while I partake of some slight refreshment, the only meal I take in the 24 hours. Then I attend to my patients, write prescriptions for their various ailments. Patients go in and out until nightfall, and sometimes even, I solemnly assure you, until 2 hours and more in the night. I converse and prescribe for them while lying down from sheer fatigue. And when night falls, I am so exhausted that I can scarcely speak." End quote. So Maimonides writes about his life, his work as a physician, his connection to the court of the Sultan. "I am," he tells us, "obliged to visit him every day." This is the description of a man who has become so prominent a physician that he is daily obligated to serve the Sultan himself, as well as the Sultan's family and household. This letter was dated 1199, 100 years after the Crusaders conquered Jerusalem, and 12 years after the Sultan Saladin conquered Jerusalem from the Crusader kingdom, an event that led to the first real Jewish return to Jerusalem in some time. The letter of Maimonides was, of course, also authored several decades after he departed the Holy Land for Egypt. Whether Maimonides personally ministered to Saladin himself seems to be debated by historians, but there is no question that he served a very significant member of Saladin's court, as well as the Sultan that was Saladin's successor. And it is intriguing in our own story to ponder these connections because it seems very possible that Maimonides had also been asked, before Saladin's conquest, to minister to the king of Jerusalem. Let us set the political and international stage within the Middle East at this time, drawing on the work of Bernard Lewis, the great scholar of the Middle East, and others. Following the Crusader conquest of Jerusalem, much of the Holy Land became known as the Kingdom of Jerusalem. The Fatimid dynasty of Egypt retained Ashkelon for the next 50 years, using it as its base for its ongoing battle with the Christian kings, until its ultimate conquest by the Crusaders, who then used it as their base for engagement with Egypt. In the 1160s, Egypt was plunged into internecine battle, leading to the end of Fatimid rulership over the land and the ultimate reign over Egypt of the ruler of Damascus, Nur ad-Din. Nur ad-Din had himself achieved victories over the Crusaders, conquering their territory in what is now Turkey and Syria and holding on to it, defeating the Second Crusade. With the death of Nur ad-Din, the man who became Sultan was Salah ad-Din Yusuf ibn Ayyub, his nephew. He was known as well as Saladin. During the 1160s, the death of the Christian king of Jerusalem, Baldwin III, led to the kingship being transferred to his brother Amalric, also known as Amori, who reigned until 1174, to be succeeded by his children. It is with this in mind that we can approach a reference to Maimonides that appears in a work by the Egyptian writer Jamal al-Din Abul Hassan Ali ibn Yusuf al-Gifti, whose father, as Bernard Lewis tells us, worked for the vizier in the Egyptian court that also employed Maimonides. Al-Gifti, as Bernard Lewis also tells us, was good friends with a Jewish doctor by the name of Joseph ibn Yahya ibn Shimon, who had himself studied medicine with Maimonides. The text we have from Al-Gifti is an abridgment of the original, and this is Lewis's rendering of what we have. The text tells us, speaking of Maimonides, quote, "He left Spain and traveled to Egypt with his family and settled in the town of Fustat among the Jews there. He revealed his religion publicly and lived in the quarter called Al-Masisa. He earned a living by dealing in precious stones and the like, and people studied philosophy under him. This was in the last days of the Egyptian Alid dynasty. They wanted to employ him among the other physicians and to send him out to the king of the Franks in Ashkelon, who asked them for a physician. They chose him, but he refused this service and refrained from participating in this affair." End quote. Who was this monarch whom Maimonides was asked to treat? We are told he was the king of the Franks, but which one? This is the subject of Bernard Lewis's discussion in a fascinating article that he wrote titled Maimonides, Lionheart, and Saladin. There are historians that suggested, and you will find this assertion online, that the monarch referred to here is Richard the Lionheart, whose own story ultimately intersects with Jerusalem and Saladin during the Third Crusade, which we will soon discuss. But this interpretation, that Maimonides was asked to treat Richard, is questioned by Bernard Lewis, who notes that in the account that we have of Maimonides from Al-Gifti, the pronoun they seems to refer to the dynasty still ruling Egypt in this account, which is the Fatimid dynasty, before Saladin took power in Egypt, and before Richard would have been in a situation that Maimonides could treat him. And even Lewis argues, if this is not dispositive, if the pronoun they is a result of error of transmission, we know as well, as Lewis goes on to point out, that Richard was known as the King of England, not as a King of the Franks. And moreover, that a different, earlier Christian king, Amalric, was heavily involved in Egypt. As Simon Montefiore writes of Amalric's reign, the king of Jerusalem, quote, "plunged into the battle for Egypt, launching no fewer than 5 invasions. The stakes were high. In the second invasion, Amalric seems to have conquered Egypt. If he had succeeded in keeping the riches and resources of that country, the Christian kingdom of Jerusalem would probably have endured, and the entire history of the region would have been different," end quote. This was not to be, but as Montefiore notes, Amalric did utilize the riches of Egypt to enrich the Crusader kingdom of Jerusalem. Lewis therefore argues that the king for whom help was sought from Maimonides was Amalric, king of Jerusalem in the late 1160s and the early 1170s. In a fascinating insight of scholarship, Lewis describes a record concerning the Christian doctor Abu Sulaiman Daoud, who was himself originally from Jerusalem, who went to work in Egypt, and whose grandson is noted as once repeating that, quote, "When King Malric came to Egypt, he was astonished at my grandfather's medical skill and asked the caliph for him. Then he took him and his 5 children to Jerusalem," end quote. Thus we have a record of a Frankish Christian king asking for help and Maimonides refusing the suggestion that he attend to this king. And we have another account of a Frankish king taking a different physician, a Christian physician, from Egypt back to Jerusalem. Joining these records, Lewis conjectures that, quote, "what seems most likely is that Amalric simply asked for a doctor and got Abu Sulaiman Daoud. May we guess," he continues, "that on this occasion Maimonides was asked and refused, and that Abu Sulaiman was then asked and accepted. The Jew might well have hesitated before placing his life in the hands of the Crusaders. The expatriate Christian need have had no fear returning to his native city under Christian rule," end quote. If Lewis is right, and this understanding is adopted by Montefiore as well, then it was during the 1160s or early 70s that one of the most famous Jews in history would have refused to journey to the King of Jerusalem to minister to him. And it's worth noting that it seems to be the case that Maimonides himself had, a bit before this period, risked his own life to enter Jerusalem and to pray on the Temple Mount during the period of Crusader rule. Thinking about this, we realize that Maimonides would have seen the state of Judaism in that Crusader kingdom, could well have sensed that nothing could be done to change the state of Jews and Judaism in that kingdom. And we can conjecture, perhaps had this in mind when he refused to journey to meet the king of Jerusalem. We cannot know how Maimonides' experience of visiting Jerusalem might have impacted the decision of meeting Amalric. But the letter describing Maimonides' visit to Jerusalem does tell us that the day he visited was declared an annual day of remembrance in the Maimonides family. And we know the following as well. As we will discuss tomorrow, the conquest of Jerusalem by Saladin allowed for a true Jewish return to Jerusalem for the first time in almost 100 years. We know as well that Maimonides ultimately served as physician to Saladin's vizier. Thus, it emerges from accounts by Montefiore and Lewis that it would seem that Maimonides would have been asked as a physician to treat one king of Jerusalem, and this Jewish physician would work in the palace of another ruler of Jerusalem. And ultimately, the court in which Maimonides did work opened Jerusalem up to Jews again. It's amazing to ponder the kingdoms of Christendom and Islam, divided for many years between Ashkelon and Jerusalem and then between the Holy Land and Egypt, suddenly, in a certain sense, both seeking the help of Dr. Moses Maimonides. But Maimonides, of course, was not first and foremost a doctor. Imagine telling the monarchs involved that 1,000 years later, both Jerusalem and Ashkelon would be Jewish cities in a Jewish state. The monarchs unquestionably would have been astonished. But the man who would have believed it was the Jewish rabbi and doctor whose medical treatment became very much in demand, whose own fame in the Jewish world grew larger and larger, a man who had already seen much in his life by the 1160s, a man who was more well known today to the Jewish residents of Jerusalem than is any of the rulers of Jerusalem from the period in which Maimonides lived. And what is studied in Jerusalem from Maimonides today is not first and foremost his medical essays, but rather his Torah, symbol of a faith and a people bound to a land, a faith, people, and land whose own story continues onward into eternity. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.